Hello, I'm John Neff, Global Editor-in-Chief of Motor One, and welcome to this week's episode of the MotorOne.com podcast. We're going to do something a little different this week. There's a lot of news happening in the industry, and we kind of want to get right to it and talk about it. So today we're going to do a little shorter podcast where we bring you the hottest news of the past week that we want to talk about. With me today on the podcast is writer Chris Smith. How you doing, Chris?
Doing really good, John.
Joining us is fellow writer Christopher Bruce. How you doing?
Doing great.
All right, so we're going to start off this week with an article about the GT500, and I want to throw that over to you, Smith, because you've been writing about the GT500 a lot for us. So what's the news?
It all boils down to something that originated really way back in 2003, 2004 with the SVT Cobra. It's comparisons with the GT500 against cars that you wouldn't normally expect. And there was Jason Camisa that did a really outstanding video where he drove the GT500 against the Hellcat, which, okay, that's a pretty apples-to-apples comparison. But then they took it on to a track with the Ferrari 812 Superfast, and this one, this is the one that got me the most, the Porsche 911 GT3 RS.
And to give a little background, Jason Camisa is a friend of the site. He's written for us before. He's a veteran, and he makes great video. This is an amazing video, just the production quality, as well as the fact he got this trio of really supercars to bring together to go against the GT500. So tell us how it did against each one.
Absolutely. And yeah, if you haven't seen the video, we've got the article up at Motor One with a link to his video. In short, the GT500 is punching way above its weight class.
Way above.
We should clarify that. Way above in terms of handling, because the GT500 never had a problem going fast in a straight line. And for this comparison, it beats the Hellcat. Okay,
it handily beat the Hellcat, like by car lengths.
It handily beat the Hellcat. Well, and Jason points out in the video, you know, when you're not at a prepped drag strip surface, which really the Hellcat and especially the Demon, those cars are designed to launch hard from a prepped drag strip surface. In the real world, it's a little different, and that video really kind of showcases that.
And they did it in the video on an airstrip, so it wasn't a prep drag surface. Right. I think the Demon on a prep drag surface would win.
Yes.
I still think it would win pretty easily. Just the way that car launches, I mean, it's set up to launch out of the hole. Just having the horsepower is neat, but that car is really set up to launch. The GT500, though, is set up to accelerate pretty hard and handle. And with that carbon fiber track package, that makes all the difference in the world. I kind of glossed over the Ferrari. They did line up the GT500 with the 812 Superfast. Doesn't quite hang with the Ferrari. The Ferrari was just able to launch a little bit better, and the Ferrari held the lead over the GT500. But the Porsche, folks, we're talking about a 911 GT3 RS on a track driven by a professional racing driver. The times were, I think, less than 0.2 seconds apart. That's a GT500 versus one of the best handling production cars in the world right now.
It was a virtual tie. It
really was.
They if they had done two more laps, then I'm sure that they could have eked out a scenario where the GT500 would have been ahead.
Now, does that mean the GT500 is just absolutely carving the heck out of corners? It's doing pretty well, but I mean, let's be honest, the GT500 has a tremendous horsepower advantage over the Porsche, the GT3 RS. And what you're seeing is the GT500 really taking the Porsche in the straights, the Porsche coming back to get the GT500 in the corners, but the GT500 still has enough in the corners to balance it out over the whole track. And that's something that we've never seen from Mustang before.
Yeah, it's crazy. But we also wrote about another head-to-head matchup between the GT500 and the Corvette. Tell us about that.
And you know, I remember this one, and I even talk about it in the article a little bit. Back when the SVT Cobra came out in 03, 04, that was kind of the first time where people said, wow, can this Mustang actually hang with a Corvette? Of course, back then, Chevrolet had dropped the Camaro. There really wasn't anything else to match the Mustang up against. And back then, it was SVT Cobra against Corvette Z06. Apples to apples. That was the ultimate evolution of both models right there. This this comparison, it's the new GT500 with the carbon fiber track package against the current C8 Corvette, which is, of course, we know the Stingray. It's the entry level Corvette.
Yeah, so it's the base model.
It's not really apples. It's not really apples to apples. But according to Motor Trend, with that track pack, the Mustang, the GT500, quicker around a track. They didn't say how much. They didn't list any time. So we don't have anything to go on there. But, you know, you're talking about a mid-engine supercar really now against an old school front engine car. Yeah.
It was strange that they were so vague about the specifics, definitely the lap times of the GT500 versus the Corvette, but any other details they left out. So I don't know why they did that. Maybe they're saving that for a video or one of their TV shows, and it is an apples to apples. You're right. This is the fastest Mustang versus the slowest Corvette.
Yeah.
So we're going to be getting Corvettes that I'm sure will eclipse the GT500 at some point.
And I got to say, I mean, I think everybody knows I'm kind of a Mustang fan, but I'm a performance fan too. I took a little exception to that. It's like, okay, this isn't really an apples to apples comparison. I want to see now what the Z06, the new Z06 will do against the GT500. That for sure. I don't think that's going to be a comparison at all. That's, I mean, just listening to that thing with the, in the C8R and seeing the C8R. Yeah, that's, I can't wait for that.
Well, and then there's probably going to be a Corvette above the Z06 as well.
Yeah.
Who knows what it'll be named? Maybe two, probably some electrification involved. The Corvette, I mean, this is the slowest Corvette still, it may have gotten trounced by the GT500, but what you get for the money is still incredible.
Oh, yeah. And hey, there's room for a GT500R.
KR.
You heard it here first.
KR, yeah, really. All right, well, speaking of the Stingray, it had a pretty good week. I want to move on to our next story, which is that the C8 2020 Corvette has won the North American Car of the Year Award, which was announced this week. Normally they're announced at the Detroit Auto Show, but since the organizers of that show have moved it from the wintry January of Detroit to a much more summery June, they didn't have that showed as the backdrop of the announcing the awards. So they just kind of held a ceremony. But the Corvette won for Car of the Year. The runner-ups were the Toyota Supra and the Hyundai Sonata. And I think this was a pretty obvious choice. The Supra made a pretty big splash when it debuted, but it debuted far earlier in the year. And I think kind of interest and had waned in it. I think the Corvette kind of arrived just at the right time for the judges to still be sniffing their Corvette fumes and riding that wave.
Only the jurors are able to drive the Corvette. It's not really available to the general public yet. Some people upset online that the Corvette won, not because it's not a good car, but simply because no one else can drive it. Do you have any opinion on that?
They had to actually bend the rules to include the Corvette because of the strike that happened at GM a few months ago. It pushed back the production of the Corvette to 2020. So basically, under normal rules, the Corvette would have become ineligible for this year's Car of the Year award, but they made an exception because they would have had to have waited a whole year. And look, I'm sure that exception was somewhat driven by the economics of giving out awards and how they earn their money and all of that. Mm-hmm. But I think, quite frankly, that whether it was this year or next year, the Corvette probably would have won. The biggest debut this year that I can think of would be the Bronco, but that's going to be in a different category for the car of the Year award. That's going to be probably in the SUV of the Year award. So I still think the Stingray would have won regardless.
And I think a lot of people forget that, the car, it's a good car, but it also just kind of turned the world upside down with what you get for the price.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've said it on this podcast a number of times. It was a once in a generation debut. In terms of how significant it was, how significant the changes to the car were, and the new benchmark it set for bang for the buck. So not surprised at all. In the other categories, in the SUV category, the Kia Telluride beat out the Hyundai Palisade, its sister car, and the Lincoln Aviator. I really thought that could have gone to any of them, but the Telluride has been picking up awards left and right. Mm-hmm. So it's a Car and Driver 10 Best. It's a, I think an automobile award, maybe. I don't know. It's got like four or five awards already. And we're a big fan of it at the Motor One offices too. So we're glad to see that one win. And then in the final category, the truck category, the truck of the year was the Jeep Gladiator. And that beat out the Ram Heavy Duty and the Ford Ranger. Again, that doesn't surprise me too much. The Ford Ranger was on sale all year, and I don't think it set the world ablaze when it came out. It was nice to see it back, but they didn't.
Well, I mean, it's back in the U.S., but that's really the same truck that's been in other markets for years.
Yeah, so that's true, too.
I mean, is it new? Yeah, it's new in the U.S., but it's not really a new truck.
And I don't think they brought anything new to the segment. I just think they you know, created a truck that they could slot in there. Nothing really exciting about it, not innovative, but it gets them on the board. And the Ram Heavy Duty, I mean, if you've got, I mean, look, Jeep Gladiator versus the Ram Heavy Duty in terms of giving an award, obviously they're going to do the Gladiator because we've been waiting for a Jeep truck for so long. So I'm not surprised by that. Mm. I did mention the Ford Bronco. So let's move on to some big news we had on the Ford Bronco this week.
I mean, we don't really know much new about it, but this week we've got our first glimpse really of a production body. Up till now, all the Bronco prototypes we've seen, they haven't really been prototypes, they've been test mules, meaning it's going to be Bronco underpinnings with...
They've essentially been Rangers that have been sliced up.
Right.
Yeah. Frankenstein Rangers.
Frankenstein Rangers with weird beds. This new batch of spy photos, it shows what appears to be a production body. There's still a lot of camouflage on it. The roof is completely camouflaged. Of course, it's wearing a camouflage wrap, and I'm looking at the photos now. I can see some false panels that are pretty obvious underneath that obscure body lines, but it still comes back to it's a freaking Bronco, man. It's square. Well, And it looks ready to go after the Jeep Wrangler.
It signals that they've moved on from testing these Franken mules that are built on Rangers to actually testing prototypes. So even if we're looking at false panels, the real body is underneath there somewhere.
Right.
And from what we can see, it's a square body. Like, it's definitely inspired by the Broncos of yore, mm-hmm. And is definitely a direct Jeep competitor.
And I mean, and we kind of knew it was coming this way. We got a preview of the Bronco R that Ford ran in Baja. And that, right. I mean, obviously that's a highly modified version, but I mean, we knew it was going to be like that. I mean, looking at this now, I mean, this is with 41 comments. I mean, this article only went up yesterday. So, I mean, obviously it's a very hot topic. And I agree with what you said earlier, John, that this could well be the big debut of 2020 when it comes out. And really, I'm surprised we haven't seen prototypes like this in spy photos sooner, because Ford says they're debuting this in the spring. That's only a few months away.
Right.
You know?
But I think a major takeaway, though, is you look at this, you look at the Bronco R, you look at them side by side. This test mule looks a lot like the Bronco R.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It just reinforces that Ford is telling the truth when they say it's going to really evoke the original Bronco.
Oh, yeah.
I'm actually more excited about all of the innovative features they're going to have, because we have so much has been revealed from patents for weird things about the Bronco. So the removable roof and doors and I think the A-pillar, like there's so many patent stories that we've done on just weird little features that Ford has been working on. So I'm expecting to see a lot of cool little stuff in the Bronco, which I think will be exciting.
And I just want to applaud the Motor One staff for really avoiding the inevitable OJ jokes that are going to be coming
out.
Now that we have what looks like the real Bronco body, man, it's going to be hard to avoid those juices loose jokes.
I don't know what age group it is, but I think for such a large group of people, when they hear Bronco, they think of that vehicle. But and that has kind of relegated the original Bronco to mm-hmm. being forgotten. And I think that this new production Bronco is really going to wipe the OJ Bronco from people's collective memories and remind everybody that this was a very popular, very significant vehicle far before it was this F-150 based monstrosity that OJ was carted around in.
It started out as something very, very different.
You're very
right about that.
And much more Jeep like. And
that
sounds like what we're going to get back to. All right, we're going to take a break in a second, but before we do, I just want to remind everyone that you can get our show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever else you listen to podcasts. So please hit the subscribe button now so you never miss a show. All right, welcome back. I want to hop right back into the news. And next, we're going to talk about a tiny little economy car that had some really exciting news this week. The Yaris GR from Toyota. Bruce, why don't you take us through that one?
Sure thing. This is, at least it looks that way, going to be forbidden fruit forever for us in the United States. And that's really unfortunate because this thing just looks like a ton of fun. So this is, in essence, the road-going version of Toyota's Yaris rally car, or at least as close as you can get to it.
And like a legitimate road, like not just like inspired by.
No. Yeah. You know, when we get to the, it's got a 1.6 liter turbocharged three cylinder. That's right. Three cylinders. Oh, but
that's great.
It is making 257 horsepower, and that is in Europe. And interestingly, the version that's in Japan is a tad bit more powerful at 268 horsepower. So
got to save the best for your homeboys.
Yeah, I guess But six-speed manual, all-wheel drive, a really trick all-wheel drive system at that. It's got Torsen limited slip differentials at both ends. Just looks like a
this
ton
is
of fun.
Incredible hardware for what is, I mean, it's below an economy car. I mean, the Yaris is like a city compact.
Right.
And all-wheel drive, massive power, six-speed manual. I mean, this is the cars that get on posters in bedrooms.
And Toyota they cut the weight. They're using carbon fiber reinforced polymer and aluminum. It only weighs 2,822 pounds. 1280 kilograms.
That's epic for me right there. You can talk about the power and the all-wheel drive, but when you have that little weight, I mean, there's no conceivable way this thing wouldn't be an absolute riot all the time.
I want to like take this on a forest rally stage or go ice racing on a lake. This thing is amazing. But let's, for contrast's sake, let's talk about the Yaris that is sold in the U.S. Tell us about that car, Bruce.
So unfortunately, the Yaris in the United States is a slightly modified Mazda 2. Toyota, they massaged the exterior styling a little bit. And the reason I said at the beginning that this is going to be remain forbidden fruit is that Toyota has no reason to bring a model that's exclusive to the rest of the world to the United States for a single, albeit very exciting, variant.
Yeah, sad trombone. We are stuck with the Mazda 2-based Yaris while the rest of the world gets this incredibly cool version of the Yaris, completely mechanically different from the one we get in the U.S. that is the basis for this awesome rally car and now gets this Yaris GR. Oh, man.
And one last thing. So we do know prices for the Japanese market. And as always, you can't quite translate prices exactly from one region to another. But just to kind of twist the knife a little bit more, base price in Japan is the equivalent of $36,100. So that's not even like this thing is, you know, going to break the bank. It's borderline.
No,
affordable.
It's definitely expensive, but it would go up against, I think, like hot hatches that are in the mid or low $30,000 range.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, and we'd probably have the same complaints about it that we do those cars, which is, oh, it's you get tons of power for the money, but it's cheap plastic inside, you know, which we're used to in this kind of car. Man, what a disappointment. Totally forbidden fruit. Hopefully we'll get to drive it anyway at some point and at least can tell everyone what it's like.
Or at least some of our European colleagues and we can pelt them with questions.
For sure, yeah. We've got Motor Ones around the world in Europe, and they should be able to drive this for us. But still, I'd rather one of us drive it.
Yeah.
But, all right, speaking of cars that are debuting, we had a couple more that I want to talk about, and one was a long-awaited debut from Genesis. Why don't you tell us about that, Smith?
Long-awaited. The GV80 is here. I think we first saw the concept way back in January of 2017. And, you know, I mentioned it in the debut post. While the world has just been going SUV crazy, here's this still very young luxury company, Genesis, getting by with just three sedans.
It always struck me as odd that they launched this brand and they brought out three sedans before they brought out an SUV.
Right.
I never got why they did that. And they did. They had to start with a sedan because they had the previous Hyundai Genesis that they, you know, they're just going to port over and make the first Genesis. But then they turned the Equus into the G90. And then they do, what is it, the G70, G60?
The G70, I think, was next.
G70,
so, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, you have, you have the G90, the G70, the G80, and now you have the GV80. From a standpoint of Genesis executives, I have to think that this was a very long time coming, but it's here, sort of. It debuted in South Korea last night, American time, in the morning for South Korea. And it's actually going to go on sale there later this month. So, I mean, we've gotten so used to seeing new vehicle debuts, and then, you know, maybe 6, 8, 10 months, a year down the road, you can buy it. It's going to go on sale right away in South Korea. Now, it will be available in the rest of the world. From what I gather, there's going to be a separate launch for that vehicle, because the South Korean market, GV80, is a little bit different. It's offered with a diesel engine there. The rest of the world, Genesis has been a little cagey on the details for engines.
We're going to find out pretty soon, because they're going to have a U.S. debut at the end of this month in Miami, home city of our headquarters. So we're going to be in attendance.
Right.
I think we'll find out more U.S. specs then.
Right. I mean, we're expecting a 2.5-liter turbo four-cylinder, I think, a V6. And I think the high end is supposed to be around 380 horsepower. That's what's coming. What really impressed last night, though, I mean, they were talking about some of the technology that's going into the GV80. And I mean, aside from just all the current suite of apps and driver safety systems and things of that nature, Genesis is advertising basically a new noise canceling system that monitors real-time road noise and then will emit basically a counter wave that counters that noise, supposedly to give you this extraordinarily quiet ride that's almost devoid of road noise. It's supposed to be the first of its kind in a vehicle. I'm very curious to see how that sounds.
There are other noise canceling systems inside cars that I thought did the same thing, but it sounds like maybe Genesis has a new wrinkle to it.
Yeah, it sounds like there's something a little bit different about this one. They also have an automatic air filtration purification system that detects if there's anything bad in the air, it'll automatically kick on. So, I mean, Genesis, they are really trying to step into the luxury SUV realm with a big emphasis on luxury. It has the power seats. I think it's power ventilated second row seats. And
to be clear, this is going to be a two-row SUV.
Yes,
so this is not have a third row.
Yes, this is a two-row. It's slotting against the BMW X5,
right.
Audi Q7. So it's of course, we don't have pricing yet for the United States. That should come later on. But it's definitely been a long time coming.
Yeah, since there's a G90 and a G60, I would imagine there will be a GV90 and a GV60 as well. So I imagine they'll eventually get a larger three-row SUV and a smaller compact SUV to go in their lineup. At least that's what their naming convention suggests. The large grill, I mean, the Genesis grills have gotten comically large, but it actually looks a little more at home.
It looks fine
on
here.
The SUV. Yeah.
It looks a little more comfortable, I think, on this. it looks a little more comfortable. It's on the sedans, you know, it looks like maybe it doesn't want to be there. But, you know, honestly, the GV80, I think it's a handsome first step into the realm. And, you know, we'll see where it goes from here.
Couldn't come soon enough for them. Speaking of oversized, comically large grills, the GMC Yukon debuted as well, sister SUV to the Chevy Tahoe and the Chevy Suburban, which have already debuted their completely new designs and new packages and platforms. Bruce, tell us a little bit about this, because you wrote about it.
Credit where credit's due. Jeff actually wrote the story, but
Jeff Perez.
I am knowledgeable at the Yukon. Like you said, it's the sister vehicle to the Tahoe and the Suburban. And if you look past the grill, you'll see that immediately. The front end is completely different here, but the rest of it really shows that Tahoe Suburban look. In terms of what's new, we're getting an AT4 trim, which is kind of the rugged, you know, off-road-y type of trim, and it looks really good. There's a lot more differentiation now between the standard Yukon models and the Denali. The Denali has a lot more chrome on the outside, whether that's your style or not. It also gets a different look on the inside. There's a slightly different center stack configuration that puts the HVAC vents on top, whereas the other trims have it below, lower on the center stack. If you want a more luxurious alternative to the Suburban and Tahoe, here's your answer. Before we get to it, in terms of power, you've got 6.2 liter V8, 5.3 liter V8, and then kind of the surprise of the bunch, 3 liter diesel inline six.
One thing GMC has always done well is sell Denalis. They have created this trim level and convinced people that it is kind of like a luxury trim. And really, in my opinion, it's not. If you get in it, it's certainly priced like a luxury trim, but if you get in it and compare it to actual luxury cars from like BMW, Mercedes that are similarly priced, I think you'll come away thinking like, this is just a higher price trim that I got suckered into, but they've done a great job selling it. So kudos to them. The AT4 is what I'm more interested in because they're kind of trying to make AT4 like the Denali for being rugged and off-road. And I think it's the same way. It's not like the AT4 models are going to follow Jeeps and Land Rovers.
Basically, the big thing here is you're getting an air ride adaptive suspension, 2 inches of ground clearance, off-road mode, hill descent mode, kind of some doodads. Yeah, basically, you're paying for a suspension and trim.
Although, I mean, when you put that in four low, you can jack that adaptive suspension up. It can do a 32-degree approach angle off-road, which I don't think is bad.
Good. Oh, yeah.
For something that size.
Right.
What GMC is better at than anything else is marketing. They could take this off the shelf GM parts, put it together in a chrome package or in an off-road package and sell a lifestyle. And they've done that really, really well. Yeah. And I don't mean to put down anyone who owns Denalis or AT4s because it's all about how they make you feel. And if they're selling the lifestyle and you're buying into it, and it makes you happy, that's great. Don't go following Jeeps down any boulder-strewn roads.
And I do got to say, I mean, looking at the Denali interior, I think it looks so much better than what you find on the other Yukons.
And that's what we heard.
And the Tahoe. It just has a cleaner look. It has a more luxurious look. Of course, I'm just looking at a picture. I need to sit inside to see how it really feels. But, kudos to them for actually doing more than just a badge this time. Yeah, really.
Jeff Perez was at the debut for us. And like you said, he wrote the article. He also did a video walk around and said specifically that the interior feels remarkably nicer than the last generation. So who knows? Maybe they have stepped up to luxury and I'll need to eat my words.
And the elephant in the room here is that the Escalade is coming. The new Escalade comes still in February. To come. So,
right.
Less
so if you want real luxury.
Now,
the baller version's coming.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that brings us to the end of our show. You can follow Chris Smith on Twitter at @chwriting. Follow Chris Bruce at ChrisBruce1985. And you can follow me at John_M_Neff. I want to thank you two for being here on this week's episode with me.
Pleasure.
Always fun.
All right. And thank you all out there for listening. We'll see you next week.